Hello Bulls fans, and welcome to another episode of Bulls HQ. Thank you for joining me again this week. I don't usually speak to you guys midweek, and I definitely didn't expect to be doing so, but given the latest unfortunate news surrounding the Bulls with yet another key player going down with an injury for an extended period of time, I felt it was necessary to discuss Chris Dunn's knee injury and the potential repercussions this has for the Bulls over the next 4 to 6 weeks of the season. So joining me today to talk Dunn's injury, as well as that crazy and weird, unexpected win over the Charlotte Hornets, is Darnell Mabry, who I'm sure everyone knows is a senior writer covering the Bulls for The Athletic. Darnell, thanks for jumping on the podcast, mate. Your first appearance on Bulls HQ, but I wish it was under better circumstances.
Yeah, it's not ideal in Bulls Nation right now. It's pretty unfortunate start to this season. There was so much anticipation for what these guys were going to do coming back in year two of the rebuild, is I guess what we're all calling it. But you know, first day of camp, Denzel Valentine goes down. I think it was the second or third day of camp, Lauri Markkanen goes down, and then you know the injury news to Chris Dunn out of nowhere. I mean, it shocked everyone the other day when they announced it, and you know, everyone thought he was fine. The writers who were in Dallas, I was not. The writers who were in Dallas said they talked to him after the game and he was fine. He wasn't, you know, he didn't appear to have a limp or anything like that. He answered questions and everyone thought everything was fine. And all of a sudden, Fred Hoiberg steps to the mics the other day at practice and announces this unfortunate injury news. And everyone knows, obviously, how important the point guard position is, and to not have Chris Dunn for, you know, potentially up to two months. You know, I know they're saying 4 to 6 weeks, but you just never know. I mean, he's going to have to get his rhythm and timing back. He's going to have to get his conditioning, his legs. And that's hoping that everything goes well, that he doesn't have a setback. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how long he's out and what this team can do without him.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't expect the news. Watching the game, I had no idea that he was kind of hurt, and the news came a bit of a shock to me, as I'm sure it did for most people. So just painting a picture for you, given the time zones for me, it was like 5 a.m. in the morning when I found out the news. I'd woke up randomly at 5 a.m. in the morning. For whatever reason, I got on and checked Twitter in half a daze, and I don't know if you were necessarily the first one with the news, but for whatever reason as to where my timeline opened up, your tweet was the first one that I saw. When I saw the news that Dunn was out potentially for 4 to 6 weeks, or that he got hurt.
I'm glad I could ruin your morning at 5 a.m.
Yeah, I didn't want to necessarily blame you for my lack of sleep, Darnell, but safe to say I didn't get to back to bed at that point. But like I said, this injury was completely out of the blue for me. It was kind of rough in that sense. But did you see it happen in real time, and did you notice it at the time? I know you had you caught the play afterwards there after the game, but during the game itself, did you see him get hurt at all?
I didn't. I thought there was another play in the game that slips my mind right now, but there was another play that I felt like, oh boy, that didn't look good. But, you know, turns out he was fine. And it was another play, the one I put on Twitter, that is the one that he actually got hurt on. And that's just unfortunate, because it was such a routine basketball play. And, you know, he actually made the layup. I was kind of joking with some other writers that, for as much as he struggles sometimes finishing, he made the layup, and you know, then obviously has the unfortunate injury to his knee. So I didn't see it. I didn't see it live, and I had to go back and review that second quarter to see what play it happened on. So you just feel bad for Chris Dunn, because like a lot of these guys, he's put in so much work and tried to really become a better player and improve his game. And, you know, the birth of his son, that's excusable, obviously. You know, that's the most important thing in life. He misses the first two games. He comes back. And then all of a sudden, in that first game that he plays, this happens. And so now he's going to miss 4 to 6 weeks at minimum. And you just feel bad for the young man.
Yeah, definitely. And it's unfortunate news for Dunn. And given, you know, the amount of work these guys put in the offseason, then to come back in your first game and get hurt, it must be, you know, it's obviously tough for us fans, but for someone like Dunn to be in his position, it's probably even worse for him. But on some levels, I'm not surprised that he got hurt. I mean, the way he plays the game, it's not unsurprising for him to get hurt. But even though I didn't necessarily expect it to happen in the first game back, but like you said, he's out 4 to 6 weeks now, maybe even longer, who knows. But how do the Bulls even try to cover this situation in the immediate short term? I think we've all been pointing out that the gaps that the Bulls have on the bench, particularly at point guard, but how do they even try to cover this in the immediate short term?
Yeah, I think we're seeing it, and we saw it the first two games without Chris, and we saw it against Charlotte at home. The first game Chris missed after the injury news was announced. They're putting the ball in Zach LaVine's hands a ton this year because they just don't have very many other options. Cameron Payne has been, I think, solid, not spectacular, far from spectacular, but solid. And Ryan Arcidiacono has really played well. So, those two guys are giving them good minutes at times, but LaVine is really going to have to be the guy who everything runs through, and Jabari Parker as well. So if they can get better production out of those two guys as playmakers, then I think that that'll help them be able to withstand this loss for a little bit. But, as you know, Mark, the problem is Zach LaVine hasn't been great as a playmaker or a distributor, a lead ball handler. He's had some experience in this league going back to Minnesota, but his decision making can stand to improve. His assist to turnover ratio can stand to improve. Some of the passes that he makes are risky, unnecessary passes, and he's got to really work on that to be able to carry the load if they're going to be looking to him to facilitate and play and lead this team with the ball in his hands.
So yeah, that's something that I was expecting to see more of LaVine dominating the ball. Like he's been a high usage player in the first few games anyway, so it was probably going to be the case once Dunn was back, irrespective of that. But I guess I was expecting LaVine to take over a little bit more, maybe have some lineups where LaVine is functioning as the sole point guard, and maybe even out there with maybe like Chandler Hutchinson and Justin Holiday surrounding him on the wing. But we just got done watching the Hornets game, so it's not necessarily the best example, given that Payne and Arcidiacono were actually quite good in this game. But do you foresee a situation where the Bulls are sort of going away from lineups where they don't necessarily have a traditional point guard out there and are pretty much just running LaVine at point guard as such?
Not at this time, because, like you said, Cameron Payne just had the game of his life. Ryan Arcidiacono has given him good minutes. And so I do think Fred Hoiberg wants to continue to have a secondary ball handler out there. I do think that when Denzel Valentine comes back, and who knows when that might be, then that might give them a little bit more flexibility, a room to play with something like that, because Denzel can handle the ball. And, I'm not saying he's a point guard and should be bringing the ball up the floor, but he can, facilitate and make some plays in the half court set. So I think that could be an interesting look. And Fred Hoiberg actually just mentioned it at practice yesterday that, because Zach has so much experience running point guard back in Minnesota, he feels really comfortable with him in that position. So I do think that once Denzel comes back, we could see something like that.
Yeah, I like that move. I think that'll be interesting. And we got to see more of Hutchinson tonight. He's not necessarily a ball player in terms of out there creating, but I thought he played pretty well tonight. But that's something I want to see either before Valentine comes back or even after he is back. But thinking more holistically of this point guard situation and the fact that the Bulls will be leaning quite heavily on Payne and Arcidiacono now in place of Dunn, I mean, these two guys are young, inexperienced guards. They're fighting for their careers at this point, essentially, particularly Payne coming into the last year of his rookie deal. But just thinking holistically and just generally how management have gone about building or fitting out this point guard position, do you have any insight at all as to why they opted to use both the backup and the third string and maybe even a little bit of the fourth string point guard slots here on guys that are fighting for their careers who have, I guess, not a lot of experience in situations in running teams?
The truth of the matter is I don't think they look at it like that. I think they really believe in Cameron Payne and, if nothing else, believe in giving him a shot. And, I'm working on a story on Cameron Payne and about all of his trials and tribulations and, sort of what he's been through and how he got here. And, it's a fascinating story, and I think that's something that a lot of people don't really take the time to take into consideration, his backstory and some of the injuries and just the adversities that he's had and had to overcome, you know, to get on the floor, just to get on the floor, forget about playing well. And I do think that the front office takes that into consideration much more than the fans do. And they want to be able to say that they know without a shadow of a doubt that he is not the player that they thought he was, or is not the player who can be a capable backup going forward. So, you know, I think they're just really trying to do their best to give him every opportunity that they can when healthy. That's a key phrase, Mark, when healthy, because he hasn't had health on his side throughout his career. And when he is healthy, you know, he has moments where he looks like he's a very, very capable backup point guard. But it's just, you know, having that health on his side has been a really big issue for him. And the front office knows it. Payne knows it. The coaching staff knows it. And when he's healthy, they want to be able to see what he can do out there. As far as Ryan Arcidiacono, I don't think they look at him as anything more than a third point guard to be able to use in emergency situations. And in year two of the rebuild, they want to give him some opportunities too. And he's obviously playing well and showing them that he can go out there and contribute and make an impact on this team. So you have to tip your cap to Arcidiacono because he is making the most of the opportunity, and that's what you want to see guys do.
Yeah, definitely. And like I said, it's probably not the best game to judge this situation or the best time to be judging it right now, given that Payne had a career night and even Arcidiacono off the bench was quite good with his 10 points as well. But I guess my larger point is, whilst I understand the need to maybe have someone like Cameron Payne in there, it would have been nice to maybe have one of Payne or Arcidiacono or even one of Euless and Harrison be, well, that spot be to a veteran guard, I think, particularly with a lot of these young forwards and centers on the roster sort of thing. But it is what it is, I guess. But I guess you've essentially answered my next question. Was, for me, I have concerns about this point guard rotation. So I was thinking longer term, given that Dunny's out, if there was potential for a trade to sort of materialize, given that Dunny's out for quite a while and we've got so much inexperience at the point guard position. But having just heard what you just suggested there, that's probably unlikely.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they really don't have the means to go out there in free agency, you know, try to grab someone unless it's a minimum contract. And, you know, obviously they'd have to waive someone else, which shouldn't be an issue on this team. But in terms of a trade, I don't see that happening because they know that Dunn's coming back. You know, it's not a long-term injury. And if you make that move, what are you really trying to accomplish at this point? When you have two guys who you actually do want to get a better look at, if you go out and try to get someone, you have to give up an asset, at least one asset, you know, hopefully not a draft pick, to get a temporary guy in here. And I just don't think that that is something that's on their radar. Now, with that being said, as soon as this podcast publishes or posts, they'll probably make a trade, knowing my luck. But I just don't see it happening. And if it did, I'd be surprised, mostly because of, number one, the cost. What would it cost the team? And number two, what would it cost in terms of you know, jeopardizing some of the other guys, minutes to guys that they want to have a nice hard look at.
Yeah, I mean, that there's certainly fair points. I just go back to thinking about Larry Markkanen and even Wendell Carter Jr. And yeah, I guess in the totem pole of things, I put their development first, and having maybe a mature age point guard around the squad could help, you know, develop those guys at a more rapid rate. But I mean, you make good points that it's probably unlikely as to why the Bulls will bring in a veteran point guard at this point. But thinking about Dunn and the fact that he's obviously gone down here with an injury so soon in the season, he obviously missed time last season with a spate of random and just weird injuries, I guess, particularly that one against the Golden State Warriors where he landed on his face almost. And, you know, that untimely injury there after he was playing well. Do the Bulls treat Dunn now as an injury-prone guy going forward, or do they view these injuries as just completely random and, you know, things that just can't be explained or necessarily planned for? How do you think they'll view him from, I guess, projecting him forward on the roster?
I think that they'll probably operate as if he is, you know, had some bad luck and, you know, has had some fluke injuries. Now, my problem with that argument or that logic is that is the definition of injury prone. You know, I mean, if you have these fluke injuries and they continue to happen to you, that makes you injury prone. And, you know, I think Chris Dunn is injury prone. I really do believe that because he continues to have just these fluky things happen to him. You know, he was going in for a layup, and I'm sure, you know, all the listeners have seen that play by now. And if they haven't, you know, it's just a random, you know, driving layup that is just a routine basketball play. And he comes down. He does come down a little bit awkwardly, but you barely notice it. And all of a sudden, you know, it's a significant knee injury. So to me, that's the definition of injury prone. Now, whether or not that changes the Bulls' thinking going forward, I can't really speak to that. I do think that they are going to, you know, continue to give him an opportunity and just try to flank him with a backup point guard that is capable. And, you know, we're seeing them spin their wheels trying to find quality players. They brought in Shaquille Harrison. They brought in Tyler Ulis on the two-way deal. And at some point, I do think we're going to see those guys get some opportunities. But I'd be shocked if they do much differently in light of Chris Dunn's latest injury.
Yeah, and to your point, look, he missed 30 games last season with a few injuries last season. He's probably going to miss at least 20 games, you would imagine, here with the knee injury. So, you know, and hopefully, fingers crossed, there's no more injuries for the remainder of the season for him. But it's not the start that he needed for year three, coming into a season where, at least in my opinion, he was probably the most important player on the roster, given that I have my concerns about the depth at point guard. So I'm hoping he gets back quick, and when he does return, that he's ready to go and he's fully fit and healthy, because the Bulls will be desperately needing him, particularly once Lauri Markkanen is back, and hopefully the team at that point is still a slight chance to maybe not necessarily make the playoffs, but at least be playing competitive basketball like they did tonight against the Charlotte Hornets. So let's talk about the Hornets. And my first question to you, Darnell, about this Hornets is, do you want to take credit for this one? Because you've mentioned it before. You've probably been one of the lone voices about Cameron Payne, sort of sticking up for the guy in a time where a lot of Bulls fans are pretty quick to get on someone like Cameron Payne. So do you want to take credit for this Cameron Payne performance and for this W?
Not at all. Cameron Payne deserves all the credit. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, for your listeners, I'd like to clear up something. It's not that I am saying Cameron Payne is, you know, the next Isaiah Thomas. You know, but I do think that he has shown us glimpses of his potential in terms of being able to knock down threes, and not just in this Hornets game, but even before then. I mean, I think, what did he shoot, 38% last year when he came back, something like that, from three? Yep. So the guy is capable. He's a capable player. And what I sort of don't understand, I'll put it that way, when it comes to the fan base and the hate for Cameron Payne, is some of the adjectives that are used. And I don't know what you know, how colorful you get with your language on your podcast, Mark, but it's some very colorful language. And I just don't understand how they can say that the guy is worthless and useless and, you know, other words that I'll refrain from using. And that's that was my whole thing, is just let's look at what he's doing and not just, you know, go along with the crowd and say that he is this, you know, unusable player, because that's far from the truth. When he's healthy, he's proven that, or demonstrated, at least in spurts, he does need to work on consistency. He'll be the first to admit that. But he's not a worthless player. He's not a useless player. And he does do some things very well. And that's all I was really trying to get across. Let me back up. Not very well. He does do some things well. So that's it. You know, it's good to see him, after battling through so much adversity, go out there and have some success. You know, I think he deserves it. He's really been through a lot. And I know I'm sounding like a Cameron Payne defender right now. And again, trust me, that's not what I'm trying to do. I just really don't understand the logic behind calling him worthless and useless and so many other things. And I guess it's probably I'm looking at it from a different angle, because I didn't care about Taj Gibson like Bulls fans do, yep. did yep. and do. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't care that the Bulls traded the farm, you know, I'm exaggerating here, but traded so much to get him. I didn't care about that. You know, I just look at what he is and what he's able to do. And I think so many people are probably taking out those things on him. And to me, that's unfair.
Yeah. And look, you raised the exact point I was going to raise. And, you know, you've probably seen a lot more pain than what we have, given you've spent some time in OKC before Chicago.
So, he couldn't get on the floor. It's not like he was. He couldn't get on the floor down there either. Too much.
So. That's true. But you still would have seen more from Payne than what most Bulls fans would have before he stepped on the floor for the Chicago Bulls. And to the point you exactly raised, I think Payne, in a lot of ways, in the same way that Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine, sort of that stigma they carried early last season, because they were traded. And they were traded for players that were beloved by this franchise or the fans of this franchise. And they came in and they didn't necessarily perform up to expectations. And given the angst this fan base has towards management, it's unfair that someone like Payne or even Dunn and LaVine last season, it's unfair the anger they cop, the wayward anger they cop from fans. And look, I've been guilty of it myself at times, so I can't necessarily speak too highly here, but I understand the position you're taking as well, because I feel like I'm doing the same for Fred Hoiberg. But and whilst I don't necessarily want to paint the picture that you're this huge defender of Cameron Payne, I think it's fair to say that your voice in this has been not unique, but it's one that the fan base sort of needs to hear, because you have raised some good things about Cameron Payne in terms of what he can do. I'm sure in this story that you're producing as well will be a good one, an insightful one for Bulls fans to read, because it is very easy to overlook the guy. But tonight he was absolutely awesome. 21 points, hit 7 threes, and I'm pretty sure they're all in the second half, which I believe is a franchise-tying record. I believe I saw that on Twitter, which was kind of crazy. But I'm not sure if they get this win without Cameron Payne.
Yeah, I mean, that's the crazy thing about it is he was scoreless in the first half, and I'm thinking, oh boy, here we go. It's Philly all over again. You know, when I thought he was, you know, a lot of people kind of really had some choice words about his performance in that game. And I thought, you know, I went back and watched his minutes and I thought that he performed okay. You know, he did his job. He could have done it better. He needed to make some shots and he needed to be a little bit more aggressive offensively. But he did a lot of things fairly well in that game. And I'm thinking he was 0-for-2 in the first half in this Hornets game. You know, he was getting some teammates involved a little bit, but he also struggled a little bit turning the ball over, and, you know, he hadn't scored. And I'm thinking, oh boy, here we go. Hoiberg's about to go to Archidiakono any minute. And to his credit, again, he comes out in the second half and scores all 21 of his points and hits those 7 threes. And it's crazy that Hoiberg said it after the last home game that Payne just needs one shot to go down. You know, he just needs to see one go in, and then it takes the lid off for him, and he grows confident. And, you know, next thing you know, he's starting to knock him in. We've never seen him do this before. He's never done it before. But, you know, it kind of shows you what he's capable of when he feels like he is comfortable and confident and in a rhythm and is just out there playing freely and loosely. And, you know, he can make an impact.
Definitely. And look, it was obviously the three-pointers that were the story of the game, the 7 from 11 from behind the three-point line. That was huge. But he also came out there, grabbed 5 rebounds, had 4 assists. But he was also good in that Detroit Pistons game as well. So it's not like it's been a complete aberration for Payne, even though that I don't necessarily expect him to come out and shoot and make 7 threes next game. But he's been okay to start this season. And I think we were a little bit harsh on him after that Philly game, going up against Ben Simmons in place of Chris Dunn. That's never an easy task. But as much as this game was about Cameron Payne and the threes that he hit, ultimately the Bulls win this game because of Zach LaVine. So another 30-point night for Zach. He also had the 4 rebounds and 5 assists. We talked about his playmaking ability and the fact that he's sort of growing in that space. And this is probably the silver lining with Dunn out, that we get to see Zach LaVine, the playmaker, and what he can do. And hopefully that's will be the silver lining, and this will be an opportunity for him to grow a little bit more as well. But take me through your thoughts about Zach LaVine tonight, his performance in general, and what you liked from what you saw from him again in this game against the Hornets, but generally what we've seen since the start of preseason.
Well, it's interesting because, and I don't know, you know, I wasn't really paying too much attention to Twitter outside of what I was tweeting during the game. But so I don't know what everyone else thought about his performance tonight, but I thought he was very, very disappointing in the first half. And again, I don't know what anyone else thinks of it, but I just didn't like the way he came out. I thought he was playing selfishly. It looked to me like he was gunning for 30 points to continue the streak, you know, which players have been known to do. And they hear these stats and they want to keep streaks alive and, you know, continue to boost their resume and have their name mentioned among all time greats. And tonight, with his fourth straight 30-point game to start the season, he put himself in a conversation with only Michael Jordan as among Bulls who have done that. So, you know, it was Michael Jordan, Bob Love, and him, and now it's just Zach LaVine and Michael Jordan, and that's obviously great company. But I just didn't like the way he came out in the first half. There were two or three possessions where Justin Holiday was wide open for a kickout, and Zach LaVine just kind of forced shots and dribbled in traffic. And, you know, some of the shots he made, I think he was 4 of 9, something like that in the first half. But he just didn't look like the same player we saw throughout most of the first three games. He had his moments, his rough patches in some of those first three, but I just thought he was a little too aggressive tonight in the first half, but wonderful in the second half. And the reason I really didn't like what he did in the first half was because he can get his shot whenever he wants. He's the only guy on the team. Antonio Blakeney might be in that category, but on a much smaller scale. Yeah. He's gonna, and it won't be for a lack of trying if he's not able to get it. He's gonna try to get a shot. But I do think that Zach LaVine is the only guy who can consistently get a good look whenever he wants, or get to the rim or get to the free throw line. So I felt like he should have come out a little bit more in playmaker mode and tried to get others involved. And he didn't do that. And it looked like some of the shots he was taking was just, they were just so forced. And you could just see the look on Justin Holiday's face, like, Zach, I'm open, pass me the ball. And Zach refused. So I didn't like the first half, but I did love his second half, and especially the way he closed the game, defending, switching out to Kemba Walker and really doing the best he could to limit Kemba. So really nice game for Zach. Some of the shot selection, again, in the first half, I didn't really like or care for, but I thought he really smartened up in the second half and played much more in control and much more within himself.
Yeah, definitely. And I can agree to that, because I think in that Dallas game as well, whilst he had that 30.9 against the Mavericks, I thought a lot of his shots that he took in that Dallas game weren't necessarily good ones. But to your point, he came good in that second half, particularly on defense. Like, there's still always going to be a couple plays where you can highlight where his defense isn't great. I know I did that tonight on Twitter, where he completely lost sight of his defender, and I think it was Nick Batou went in there for an easy dunk at one point, maybe in the second quarter. But I think largely you have to be pretty happy with what LaVine dished up, particularly at the fact that the Bulls got the ball back there on a defensive play he made on Kemba Walker. So they were in a position there to go in to get some points towards the end of the game and really ice that game or take the lead in that game because of a defensive play Zach LaVine made, which is not something we're used to saying about Zach.
Yeah, he's trying. You can say a lot about his defense, but the one thing that I will say is that he is trying. There are times when it just looks horrendous because he loses his man so easily. And next thing you know, it's a backdoor or a wide open three, something like that. But I do think he is genuinely giving good effort for the most part. When it comes to transition, he needs to get back on defense, and that can be a lot better. But especially like when he misses a layup or doesn't get a call, something like that. So although he hadn't missed many layups this season, that's one of the things about Zach's performance, early season performance, has really been impressive. Some of the acrobatic layups that he's been able to make, left hand, right hand, doesn't matter. He's finishing incredibly well. And, I think that's almost getting lost in the mix of some of the three pointers that he's making and some of the other difficult shots that he's making. So I do like what he's done this year. I'm not going to sit here and criticize him too harshly because, I think he's giving good effort defensively and he's making incredible shots offensively and not without so much help. You know, he doesn't have a lot of help out there offensively. Bobby Portis had that great first game, and he's kind of been, he's kind of been downhill from there. And now he's going to have this, his knee scanned in the morning. What is that going to be? What's today? I don't even know what today is. Thursday morning in Chicago. And you got to have your fingers crossed that he's not going to be out for a significant amount of time. But he declined comment to reporters today. The Bulls are, will not practice on Thursday. So, you know, who knows what the status of Bobby Portis is going to be going forward. That's going to be interesting because they can't afford to lose another largely reliable player.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the funny thing in a way. Our injuries, funny isn't the right word, but you would have thought the power forward position was probably the strongest the Bulls are probably at. But Lauri Markkanen is obviously out. Now potentially Bobby Portis too. And I guess that pretty much only really leaves Jabari Parker at power forward. So seeing Portis go down, and he was clearly in obvious pain after getting hurt there. I'm not sure if it was the ankle or the knee, maybe a combination of the two. But it doesn't look great for Portis. So that's probably the only real negative coming out of this game. So hopefully it's not too bad for Bobby, given that, one, he's been playing pretty well to start the season, and the fact that he's obviously a free agent in the offseason turned down, or the Bulls and Portis couldn't reach an extension. So hopefully it's not a significant knee injury or something of that nature for Bobby, but that's probably the only real negative coming out of this game. But do you think Zach LaVine was a little bit happier with some of the sets that Fred Hoiberg was running there?
You know, I was sitting there laughing on Press Row tonight because I'm thinking Cameron Payne's got the hot hand. I wonder if they're going to run sets for Cameron Payne and get the ball to the right people, you know? So it was just funny to think back to that comment. And now to see Cameron Payne have the hot hand, are you going to give the ball up, Zach? Probably not, especially not to Cameron Payne. But I don't even remember the question, Mark. I'm sorry.
No, it was more just me being a bit silly there about just pointing out the random and odd comments LaVine had after the Dallas game, where he was sort of, I wasn't sure if he was calling out Hoiberg necessarily or necessarily calling out the team for not running the appropriate sets that Hoiberg was designing out of timeouts or whatever it may have been. It was kind of an odd one, but it came out randomly. But yeah, it was just pointing or poking a little fun there, given that the Bulls managed to eke out this win, and there probably won't be any talk about bad coaching or bad play calls or anything of that after this game, I'm tipping.
Fred Hoiberg, I thought, coached a heck of a game.
Yes, he did.
You know, his late game execution or decision making, not execution, but late game decisions were on point, I thought. He did offense for defense on the possession where Zach got the steal. He took out Jabari Parker. He puts in Ryan Arcidiacono, you know, smaller, quicker, more athletic. I don't know if he's more athletic, but he's scrappier.
Yeah.
He's definitely scrappier.
More grit.
He's going to go out there and give it all defensively. You know that about Arcidiacono. And then when the Bulls got the ball back, he takes out Arcidiacono and puts in Jabari Parker. So, and not just that, but he continued to target Kemba Walker in that ball screen, trying to get the switch on Cameron Payne's man, who was Kemba Walker, and get a smaller man on Zach LaVine. And Zach LaVine went to work. Obviously, that one of the last shots he took, people didn't like because he settled and looked like he had a clear driving lane to try to either get closer to the rim or and finish or kick out to it. Cameron Payne was sitting on 7 threes at that point. So, you know, I really liked what we saw from Fred Hoiberg tonight.
Yeah, me too. And as someone who's been branded a Hoiberg defender at this point, I was very happy to see some of the changes he made in this game. So we talked about a couple there in terms of offensive and defensive sort of substitutions that he made towards the death of the game. But even in that second quarter, even during the first quarter, the fact that he went to Cristiano Felicio, to me at least, was an attempt to really corral Kemba Walker now that Dunn was out, and they were switching a lot more with the bigs, with using Felicio in place of Lopez in that situation. So that was an interesting move from Hoiberg. Felicio came up pretty big, 9 points, 5 rebounds in this game. But even given more minutes to Chandler Hutchinson, who was really good. 8 points for the rookie there in 13 minutes. I was a little bit concerned in terms of where he was going. He hadn't looked very strong through preseason and the start of this season, but that was definitely his best showing. And he had that huge dunk in the second quarter. So That was an adjustment from Fred Hoiberg, getting minutes to Felicio, but also playing Chandler Hutchinson more.
Yeah, and you know, when Felicio checked in the first time, I don't know what Wendell Carter had going on. Maybe he had something in his eye. Maybe he had something in his shoe. I don't know. But he came out for about a minute. But it was so early in the game. I think it was about 9 minutes left in the game, in the first quarter. And Cristiano Felicio's checking in. You know, not only is he checking in, he's checking in over Robin Lopez. He's checking in early in the game. And I'm thinking, what is happening here? And I'm okay, when Wendell came back in, I thought, all right, Wendell had something wrong, and this was just, they didn't want to mess up the rotation and put Robin in. But when it was time for Wendell to sit, they went right back to Felicio, and I'm thinking, am I on Mars right now? What is happening? But then, again, to his credit, and I'm saying that a lot because everyone played well tonight, I thought was pretty much everyone played well. But Felicio played his butt off, and you have to give him credit because he came in and he did exactly what he was supposed to do in his minutes. And for a guy who hasn't played, I don't know if he's gotten in the game at all this year.
I can't remember seeing him. He may have played spot minutes in a blowout or something like that, but meaningful minutes.
So for a guy who hasn't played at all, you really got to give him credit for going out there and performing the way he did. I mean, I thought he was, he was making himself available for passes on rolls to the rim. He was rebounding, he was moving his feet defensively, and picking up the coverages that the Bulls were throwing at the Hornets tonight. So, I thought he played really well, and that's not something I expected, to say the least.
No, definitely. And look, I assumed I had missed the news about Robin Lopez. I thought maybe I missed a tweet or something that he was not available for some reason in this game, hence why Felicio was checking in, but that wasn't the case. I was surprised as anyone else, but as you pointed out, he was really good. But obviously we're reveling in this win at the moment, but there's probably still some lasting concerns, some themes that we've seen over the first nine or so games, including preseason, that still reared its head in this Hornets game. Even though the Bulls got the win, the two-point win, they still gave up 110 points to the Hornets, who aren't necessarily an offensive juggernaut themselves. The Bulls' defensive rating tonight, 115.8, which is a marginal improvement on what they've been doing in other games, but still pretty poor. They gave up 35 three-point attempts. They had 8 more turnovers than the Hornets, so they've still got a lot to clean up before their next game against the Hornets on the road.
Come on, Mark. Can we just enjoy one win for one night?
We can, but I've got to bring us back down to some sort of realistic plane here.
You make great points, obviously, but I think what one thing that we probably all got to wrap our minds around with the scoring is it's up, and it's going to stay up, and 110 points is the new 100 points, so I think they did a terrific job. They held the Hornets, I think, 43% shooting. The Hornets took 35 threes, only made 10 of those threes, so they did a really nice job, I thought, defensively. Obviously, there are still holes, there's still gaps, there's still lapses, there's still some rotations that are off. But the effort, I thought, was tremendous tonight, and I thought it was, miles better than what it's been. So I was impressed. I was impressed with them. And not to mention, Kemba Walker. Cameron Payne almost outplayed Kemba Walker.
He did.
and you could probably say he did. I mean, the box score doesn't show it. Kemba had 23 points. Payne had 21, but Kemba was 5 of 14. So the defensive job they did on Kemba Walker, who's off to a great start this season, scoring the ball, I thought was incredible. Now, on Friday, I think Kemba Walker is going to end up with 45 points. he was mad all night. He was griping to the refs all night, and he just never seemed to find his rhythm. And I think going back home, seeing this team and seeing what they did to him, they trapped him. They switched a lot early. Then they started trying to trap him. They threw a lot of coverages at him. But again, the Bulls executed those coverages nicely. And I think he's going to bounce back, and Friday could be a different story.
Hopefully for the Bulls, it's not that the story, but you would expect the Hornets, a mature age roster, to be probably reeling after this win, a game they probably thought they may have had a W here, particularly on the road. So they go back home now and obviously face the Bulls and will be trying to get back that W. But have you been somewhat surprised about the three-point offense as well as the three-point defense for the Chicago Bulls? Obviously, I've referenced the three-pointers there. The Bulls are pretty much last in the league in three-point attempts. But beyond that, even on offense, the Bulls haven't been necessarily taking many threes themselves. And I think prior to this game, it was only 26 threes per game, which was bottom five per game in the league. They were getting outscored by about 15 points from the three-point line prior to this game. So not only have they been giving up a lot of threes, but they haven't been making them themselves. Now, obviously, when you take out Lauri Markkanen and Denzel Valentine from the rotation, that's going to impact your ability to hit threes from deep. But did you expect such a discrepancy that we've seen over the first four games in this regular season?
I didn't. And I tell you, I know the exact moment when I felt some concern. It was the second preseason game in Milwaukee. I think a lot of it had to do with Jabari Parker going out there and trying to prove a message. But from the opening tip, it just did not look good offensively. The ball was not moving. They moved the ball, I thought, a lot better last season, when people were in the lineup and healthy. And I just didn't think that the ball was moving. And, you know, I looked up at the numbers just yesterday, and sure enough, they're dead last in passes per game. And I think we're seeing way too much isolation, which is very disturbing because Zach LaVine's the only elite one-on-one scorer they have. And then I think they're all trying to do it too much, really. I do. I think they're all trying to do too much on their own, I should say. And they got to get away from that. Somehow, some way, they've got to try to get back to working the ball around and getting good looks and helping each other out. I mean, Zach's on a mission, I think, he wants to prove that he's worth the contract. It looks like he's coming out there trying to prove that he's worth the contract at times. But I do think he's played well for the most part. But I think he needs to move the ball more. I think Jabari Parker needs to move the ball more. And I actually thought Jabari Parker in this Hornets game moved the ball incredibly well. Like, he was finding his teammates and getting guys get good looks. So, you got to give him a lot of credit for the way that he came out there and played in that Hornets game. But defensively, in terms of giving up threes, I just think that they're having so much trouble stopping the ball. Ball movement is going to kill this team until they figure out these rotations, because you saw it in that Dallas game. The ball just whipped around and whipped around until it found the open shooter. And the teams that are willing to do that are going to get whatever open shot they want, as long as they're patient. And the Bulls haven't demonstrated that level of patience. And it's, I think, one of the reasons we're not seeing them get as many three-point shots. But also, Fred Hoiberg has said that he wants them to drive the ball. He wants them to continue to put pressure on the defense and try to get some free throws, which I understand that logic completely. But at the same time, in a league where everyone's shooting so many threes now, driving the ball and pulling up for the Jabari Parker special, the long contested mid-range shot, that's not going to win you very many games. You know, that's not a fair fight. So I think they need to start trying to match wits with some of these teams. And obviously, without Lauri Markkanen and Denzel Valentine, it's going to be hard to keep up. But hey, you got Cameron Payne hitting seven of them a game now.
Well, I mean, that just adds to the aberration of this game and the fact that the Bulls probably don't get this W without Payne tonight, which is kind of crazy to think about. But it's a little bit more crazy to think about because you had something on The Athletic that this morning, my time at least, that I read, which was somewhat scathing about the Bulls, I guess, and just their general state of the franchise. And you referenced the fact that the team wasn't moving the ball in that piece, that the fact that they're pretty much last in the league in passes and touches at the moment, or at least prior to this Hornets game. So I gave you credit before for this win, but do you feel like this is kind of like an ironic win that you release that sort of pretty that fire article, but at the same time, the Bulls come out then after that and pretty much have this just crazy, random, stupid game?
Yeah, I'm an idiot. Here's what happens in this league all the time, in professional sports, really, all the time. You know, guys, teams have adversity. They hit adversity, and they, everyone's counting them out, and they go out there and they put together one great game or one great performance and, you know, get a feel good win. And then before you know it, it's right back to the status quo. And, you know, I'm not predicting that the Bulls will, you know, go out there and just continue to lay more eggs, but I do think that it's going to be a struggle. They just don't have the firepower. Zach LaVine's not going to score 30 points every. He's not going to average 30 points this season, I don't think. He looked like he was trying tonight, though. So I think that that was probably a little bit of what went on. Win one for the Gipper type thing. They knew Chris Dunn was going to be out for a while. They knew their backs were against the wall. And so they wanted to go out there and really put on a nice performance and play well. And, you know, look, you know, they were a Charlotte Hornets turnover away from losing this game. So I don't want to act like everything is, you know, and you just said it, you know, there's still some issues. But you know, I don't think this one game overshadows the what's the word that I want to use? The spectacle that this season has become quickly. And for as long as these guys are going to be out with injuries, and as long as they're going to be relying on, you know, Cameron Payne and Ryan Arcidiacono, and apparently Cristiano Felicio and Chandler Hutchinson, I they're going to have their share of struggles. So, you know, I'm not going to read too much into one game.
No, I think that's certainly fair. And look, we've mentioned that they're back on the road against the Hornets on Friday. On Saturday, they're on the road against the Atlanta Hawks. Now, the Hawks, obviously a rebuilding team themselves, but they've been kind of frisky here, and Trae Young's been balling out. So that's not necessarily a guaranteed win, but they're the next two games. But thereafter, starting Monday, they've got the Warriors, the Nuggets, the Indiana Pacers, the Houston Rockets. So that's a tough stretch of games coming up next week. So if the Bulls are going to get a few wins here on the board, they need to get them before they face the Golden State Warriors, one would imagine. But the last one, Darnell, before I let you get off here, is the tank narrative. We saw this before this game as well. And again, this feeds into the whole idea of the Bulls always do the reverse of what you expect them to do. It's something that they just have done over the last 3, 4, 5 years. It's always the case with this team for whatever reason. But a lot of people online were firing up the tank narrative after the Dunn news came out. I thought it was a little bit early for that talk, but I guess getting back to what we've been talking about in terms of their deficiencies that this squad currently has, even in light of all the injuries, do they even need to actively tank to be bad at the moment? Because it seems like they can go out there and just do their thing and still be pretty damn bad.
I thought that's actually what they were doing when they put Felicio in the game. I really did. I looked around, I threw my hands up, and I said, where am I? And how did I get here? Who kidnapped me? How did I get here? But you know, I mean, they have, like you said, a lot of deficiencies. Their defense is not going to be good this season. And because of all the injuries, particularly to Lauri Markkanen and Chris Dunn, they're going to have their share of struggles. So I don't think that they need to go out there and sit Robin Lopez or sit you know, Zach LaVine again like they did at the end of last year. They're going to lose games organically this time. But, man, it was good that they got this win because, like you said, that schedule that's coming up, it's not pretty. And if they didn't get this one, you don't know where the next one was or the first one would have come. So, but it's funny though, Mark, I was sitting there thinking, and I shouldn't say this, I know this, but I'm sitting there thinking, really, guys, you're going to win this game? Really? Because I'm kind of on the tank. I'm kind of on the tank myself. Like,
just, well, yeah, I saw you reach out to Tankathon.
Yeah. I'm going down to Indianapolis. I think it's about two and a half hour drive from here, something like that, maybe three, I don't know. I'm going to go down there in 2 weeks, and I'm going to check out those guys, and I want to see what they look like and how they could potentially fit in a Chicago Bulls uniform. So to me, here's my logic. Get the losses out of the way early. That way, in the second half of the season, you can, you know, if you win, all right, no big deal. You know, you're just making up for lost time with the wins, but you've got enough losses in the bank to where you could potentially be have one of the worst records. So, and with the lottery reform, you know, who knows? Who knows what would happen? You could have the fifth worst record and end up with the first pick. So I do think that they, at this point, you know, with so many injuries, I'm not saying go out there and actively do it. Maybe it happens organically, like we said, but the best thing that could happen to this Bulls team is going out and getting RJ Barrett, Cameron Reddish, or Zion Williamson.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly the case, and I'm sure there'll be plenty of time in the coming months for some draft talks. I won't labor on that point too much, but we'll see what happens. As long as there's organic growth of the players as well, if these L's start to sort of rack up, like we've seen with Zach LaVine, he's obviously clearly improved. We get to see Larry Markkanen maybe in a month or so. So long as these players are out there and improving, I've liked what I've seen from Wendell Carter Jr. as well, then I don't really care about the result, but we'll see how it all plays out over the coming months. But Darnell, I appreciate you jumping on the line, mate, and spending some time with me here to go through the unfortunate news about Chris Dunn. But then to, I guess, pick things up here with this, like I said, this random, crazy, stupid win over the Charlotte Hornets. I appreciate you jumping on, mate. But before you get away, if you could just let the people know where to follow you online. I'm sure they know already, but yeah, just give yourself a plug.
TheAthletic.com. You know, we're in every U.S. market now and in Canada. Well, not every U.S. market, but we're covering every pro team in the U.S. and we're in Canada as well. And, you know, for a very low, low monthly fee, you know, you can get some great quality journalism. And you find us at The Athletic Shy on Twitter, and I'm at Darnell Mayberry, DarnellMayberry on Twitter.
Perfect, mate. I appreciate you coming on, and I'm sure you got those nuggets to work on for us in the morning that I'm definitely will be reading on The Athletic. So again, thanks for coming on, and we'll do it again sometime.
Anytime. Keep up the great work.
Thanks, mate. All right, folks, so that just about does it for another episode of Bulls HQ. Thank you for jumping on and joining me this week. Again, like I said a little bit earlier, it wasn't a planned episode necessarily. I didn't really want to be doing this podcast, obviously, given the news with Chris Dunn. I'd rather him be out there healthy playing and that sort of thing, but obviously, given his injury, I thought it made sense to jump online and get our thoughts out there about Chris Dunn, but it was also timely as well that the Bulls happened to pull out an amazing win here against the Charlotte Hornets. So thanks for joining me. Thanks again to Darnell for coming on. It was always a pleasure talking to someone like Darnell who covers this team pretty extensively. So give Darnell a follow if you're not already doing so. I'm sure you are, as well as The Athletic too, but do that if you're not. In the meantime, follow the show on Twitter at BullsHQPod. Follow me on Twitter at MKHoops. And we'll be back again on Monday with another wrap-up of probably the weekend's games here. It'll be me. It'll be Fred Pfeiffer. We'll be talking Bulls. So be on the lookout for that on Monday. So until then, thanks for joining me, and I'll catch you all again next time.